It's not about proving you can do it once.
The long wait has ended. After a half century, the Milwaukee Bucks are NBA champions once again.
It's about showing you can do it again.
Three ball, why not? Cash money Middleton.
And Giannis
down the lane in a man slam.
It's Holiday.
Floats it off the window and good.
Let's talk Bucks.
We're going to listen to whatever, you know, Bud wants us to do, and we're going to go out there and compete.
Game recaps, analysis, and previewing every second of playoff basketball for the reigning champs. This is Bucks at 6 with Alex Stroh on ESPN Wisconsin and streaming on Wisconsin On Demand.
Oh, man. Let's decompress. We're okay. Everything's okay. Bucks fall in game two last night to the Chicago Bulls. Woof. That's about all I got. This is Bucks at 6 across ESPN Wisconsin, 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee, 100.5 ESPN Madison. Your way in, 800-990-3776. Let's just get it all out. This is a safe space. We can do this together. 800-990-3776. That's the First Midwest Bank talking text line. First Midwest Bank, a division of Old National Bank. And we do have some news to get into regarding Chris Middleton, so we'll do that here in a second. But a fun show today. We'll talk to Justin Garcia at 6:15 of the Milwaukee Bucks Radio Network. Get the Bucks perspective of things. Then at 6:30, we'll go to the Bulls side of things. We'll talk with Jonathan Hood from ESPN 1000 in Chicago on all things Bulls and their big win last night, the huge game by DeMar DeRozan. So a ton to get into today. We'll get into all that. But we start with Chris Middleton, as Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN has reported about a half an hour ago. And I quote, Milwaukee Bucks all-star Chris Middleton has an MCL sprain in his left knee and will be reevaluated in 2 weeks, sources tell ESPN. Bucks will have to play without Middleton for the rest of this first-round series against Chicago. I feel like I'm having deja vu a little bit, right? Like, the Giannis Antetokounmpo injury in the playoffs last year was devastating. It wasn't detrimental because, obviously, we know what happened, but just not good timing for this to happen to Chris Middleton, who we've talked about plenty this week, right? You view him to be kind of that number two option, number three option, however you view it, right? He is a huge, huge part to why this team succeeds, and now you're without him the remainder of the series. I don't think that's a huge deal. You can still win this series, I think, pretty handedly, even without Chris Middleton, and I'll get into why I feel that way here in a second. But it's the after that part of this where I get concerned, because we know the next series is going to be a barn burner. It's going to be a fist fight, whoever they get. It's looking like Boston, up 2-0 now on the Brooklyn Nets. The Boston Celtics are. So you get the winner of that series, I think it's going to be a fist fight. It's going to be a really good series. So you're hoping you can get, I don't know, 80% of Chris Middleton for that series and hope he can slowly progress as hopefully the Bucks continue to progress throughout the playoffs. And you got him back at 100% come Eastern Conference Finals or Finals time. But 2 weeks without reevaluation, it's a little concerning. So do you almost hope the series goes to 6 or 7 games to buy Chris Middleton time? I don't know. I don't know what the mindset is with this news just coming out about a half an hour ago. But when you saw it last night, and if you were watching the TNT feed, you didn't see a replay because they didn't show one, when Chris Middleton slipped and sprained his MCL in his left knee. But you know it's not ideal when a guy goes to the locker room, comes back out of the locker room, and then turns right around and goes back to the locker room. That's never a good sign, and that's what happened last night with Chris Middleton. So 800-990-3776, that's the First Midwest Bank talking text line once again. Talking Bucks loss in Game 2, the series now knotted up at one game apiece, and heads back to the United Center in Chicago for tomorrow's Game 3. We talked about the Suns-Pelicans series yesterday, New Orleans and Phoenix, the 1-8 seed in the Western Conference, and how in Game 2, when Devin Booker went down, I was thinking to myself, you know, if the Suns win this game, they're okay, right? But the Pelicans stormed back and won that game, tied the series up at 1, and now go back to New Orleans for Game 3, and there's no Devin Booker. It changes the complexity of this series. Well, here we are with the same scenario, to a point. You still got Giannis. You're not losing your best player like Phoenix did, but you're losing, debatably, your second best player. The guy that is a shot creator, shot maker. And he was starting to do that before he got injured last night, was really heating up from outside, and then he goes down at a bad time. So I understand the panic meter has moved for a lot of Bucks fans. It hasn't really moved for me. Obviously, Chris Middleton is super, super important, crucial to your success long-term in this playoffs. But if you can get him back at some point in the next series, that's a big sigh of relief. But it all comes down to what Chris Middleton's body can handle and how comfortable he is with coming back, and hopefully that happens next series. But I don't view it as a detriment to this series, because Milwaukee even showed me last night, and I know it's going to sound weird given a loss, but Milwaukee showed me last night they're the better team in the series. Because good teams punch back, great teams respond. They wouldn't go away, even when everything was against them. Bobby Portis goes out with the eye abrasion. Chris Middleton goes out with the MCL sprain. And Milwaukee would not go away. They were in it the entire game, even without those two guys. So that was an impressive response, despite not being able to get the win, at least to me, by the Milwaukee Bucks. It was a response I was happy with seeing. Obviously, I would have liked the win, but I can live without the win. A lot of us projected probably a gentleman's sweep in this series, 4-1. Now maybe we go six games, which, again, I don't know that that's a bad thing if you're not reevaluating Chris Middleton for 2 weeks, because you go six games and you get a week and a half. I mean, you buy some time for Chris Middleton. So I don't know what happens in the series now. I do know that the Bucks will win it. I really do, unless something crazy happens otherwise. And you can never predict stuff that happened last night, like an MCL sprain and an eye abrasion and a bloody eye for Bobby Portis. But given how well Chicago played offensively last night, I just don't see a repeat performance. We talked a lot about the really rough shooting performance they had in Game 1 the last couple days. Last night, they came out and they just couldn't miss. 48% from outside. They went 12 of 25 from 3. That's really, really good shooting. And Milwaukee, you know, obviously doesn't always guard the three ball, and some of these were unguarded and open shots. But 48% from outside is not a repeatable performance in my mind. So I don't think Chicago shoots as well as they did last night again. I just don't see that happening the remainder of the series. Adjustments need to be made. We've talked plenty the last couple of years about Mike Budenholzer not being the best in-game adjustment maker. I think last night was another product of that. But between games, he's better. And I think as you go into Game 3, knowing you're without Chris Middleton, maybe without Bobby Portis, depending on what happens there, you'll make those adjustments. And you'll find ways defensively to scheme against, you know, not allowing DeMar DeRozan to go out for 41 points and hit every mid-range monster, DeMar DeRozan. He had a terrific game. Super fun to watch him go off last night. But again, I just don't think that's a repeatable performance. As good as DeMar DeRozan's been all year for Chicago, I don't think you can expect him to go for 41 points another time in the series. The Bucks aren't going to let that happen defensively. So I still feel really confident in the Milwaukee Bucks' ability to win this series in 5 or 6. And then that's when you refocus on what the next round brings. And whether that's Boston or Brooklyn, that's going to be a slobber knocker of a series. And you would really hope Chris Middleton can get back for that. But you can't predict that. Can't predict that. So we'll see moving forward. 800-990-3776. That's your way into the show. We'll talk with Justin Garcia next segment on all things Bucks and obviously, you know, some of the feeling around the team. But we'll start with Giannis Antetokounmpo, who had a monster performance. He stepped up. He did everything he could. Outside of he makes a couple more free throws, the Bucks might win that game. But that's a topic for another day. Giannis asked about what he felt when Chris Middleton left the game with the MCL sprain, and, well, he felt like a lot of us felt. Here's Giannis last night after the game.
You know, he was on the floor, but we all kind of took our attention to Brooke, that he made the basket, but then you expect him to get up, you know, and to, you know, walk it off and kind of get back to the game, but you could see that he was, like, limping and limping and limping, and you know, you're thinking that I hope this is not bad, I hope this is not bad, I hope this is not bad, like we need this guy. But then when he asks, you know, for a sub, you know that it's kind of bothering him because he doesn't leave the game if he's not hurt.
Yeah, that's Giannis Antetokounmpo last night after the 114-110 loss to Chicago at Fiserv Forum, evening the series up at one game apiece, saying, that was his thought process in the moment. It's just you're hoping it's not bad, and then you realize, oh, maybe it is bad. And now we know today, almost 24 hours later, that it ain't great. Certainly isn't great. He'll be reevaluated. Chris Middleton will be in 2 weeks with an MCL sprain in his left knee. So that is not good for the Bucks, but I don't think it's detrimental to this opening round series. I just don't view it that way. Milwaukee proved to me last night that they're the better team in this series, and Chicago needs just about everything to go right in their favor for them to win a game. And maybe it happens one more time, but it ain't happening three more times. It's just not. It's just there's I still feel strongly 98.5% the Bucks win this series in less than seven games. I'm still very confident in Milwaukee's ability. They're the better team in the series, but the Bulls need everything to go right for them, and it just about did last night. But they still don't have a lot of answers defensively for two guys in particular, Giannis Antetokounmpo, who was just unbelievable again last night. 33 points, 18 rebounds, 9 assists, an assist short of a triple-double. And Brook Lopez, they haven't had a ton of answers for him either, at least defensively. 25 points for Brook again last night. He also had a really solid game offensively, game one. So no answers there for the Bulls. If that continues to be a trend, I think Milwaukee wins in five. I'm still feeling very confident. Chris Larson running the show. Chris, am I too optimistic, or are you also feeling still pretty confident with the Bucks' abilities, even without Chris Middleton?
No, I'm 100% confident the Bucks are still going to win the series. Now it just might happen to go six instead of, four, or the gentlemanly sweep of five. I just still think the Bucks have just too much firepower. They obviously didn't guard DeMar DeRozan as well in game two as they did in game one. But Brook Lopez definitely showed out again in game two, which gives me a little bit of confidence that bodes well for the Bucks going forward. But Drew Holiday really has to pick up the slack in Middleton's absence. He's got to stop turning the ball over. I think in game two, between him and Middleton, they had 12 turnovers and like 14 made field goals. Yeah. So they have to definitely clean that. Turnovers and missed free throws have been the biggest killer so far for the Bucks in these first two games. But I'm 100% confident the Bucks can move on. Can they win the next series without Middleton? That's yet to be seen. It's going to be a lot tougher whether they face the Celtics or the Nets, looking like the Celtics right now. But I think they can definitely beat the Bulls and move on to the next round.
Okay, good. Still, I'm glad Middleton. We're on the same page there. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think this series should be an easy win. And the free throws, you mentioned, maybe we'll get into that a bit later. But we need Giannis to shoot like he did in Game 6 of the finals. He was 17 of 19 in Game 6 of the finals. He went 11 of 18 last night, which is still not a horrible clip for Giannis. But you lose by 4 points and you miss 7 free throws by one guy. Yeah, just saying. I mean, they probably could have won that game with a couple more free throw makes. We'll talk with Justin Garcia. He is the Bucks Radio Network pregame, halftime, postgame host. You also hear him after every Bucks game on 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee on Bucks Talk. I listened last night, man. It was a tough loss, but everybody, I think, is still on the same page as me, feeling pretty confident in this series. We'll get Justin Garcia's. We'll take his pulse next. It's Bucks at 6 across ESPN Wisconsin. Continuing the reaction from the Game 2 loss for the Milwaukee Bucks to the Chicago Bulls. 114-110 last night at Fiserv Forum. Evens up the series at one game apiece as we head to the United Center for Game 3 tomorrow in Chicago. It's Bucks at 6:18. I'm Alex Stroh. Excited to be joined now by the Milwaukee Bucks pregame, halftime, postgame host of Bucks Talk after the game, every game on 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee. I think he's filled in on Wilde and Tausch and Scalzo and Brust across ESPN in Wisconsin this week. The hardest working man in showbiz, Justin Garcia, joins me now. Justin, I guess let's just start with the Chris Middleton reaction. I don't view it as detrimental to this series, but long term, it could be. What's your thoughts, I guess, here about 24 hours, a little bit less, removed from the MCL sprain for Chris Middleton? Not ideal, but I don't view it as the end of the world for this series.
Not ideal, but it's detrimental this series if you're going to get the Drew Holiday offensively that you got the first two games. That where it really loomed with his absence, because, you know, the Bucks were out of that game for most of the second quarter on, and it was Chris Middleton heating up in the third quarter that turned things around, and he left with 2 seconds left in the third, and I believe the Bulls hit two free throws there and then scored the first 9 points of the fourth quarter. So Chris was the guy that kind of brought them back. For all the criticism he took in game one, he was the guy that brought them back in game two, and then his absence, they just didn't really look the same. So I agree. As long as Drew Holiday plays offensively the way that we've seen for most of the regular season and that we know he's capable of playing, they're a better team than the Bulls, and they still should win this series. But I think the concern is, you know, what does this mean going forward? Because the update of he'll be reevaluated in 2 weeks, that doesn't mean he's going to be back in 2 weeks. And you need Chris Middleton against it's going to be the Boston Celtics. I think we can all say that at this point. You need Chris Middleton against that team.
Yeah, you do. I mean, that's where it gets real sticky for me, right, is the moving forward after this series. So I guess the theory of, you know, if this game goes six or seven, is that a good thing or is that not a good thing, right? Like, I'm trying to kick that around.
Man, you must be reading my mind, because I was just talking about that with somebody else earlier. You know, it might not be the worst thing in the world if this series goes long. If we know it's 2 weeks that he's going to be reevaluated, I kind of want him to miss some more time in this series, or want this series to go on as long as possible, right, Ben, because yeah, the games against Boston are just going to be so important. And, you know, even with the two-week mark, you're going to miss him for at least some period of time against the Celtics, assuming you get to the second round. It could be the entire series as well, but it is one of those things that you say, I know this is crazy, but do you almost want this series to go longer? We know it's at least going to go five through next Wednesday. Game six would be Friday, and then game seven would be Sunday. So we'd be at about 10 days at that point of game seven. So you'd be getting close to the two-week reevaluation mark.
Yeah, it's tricky, and I guess you can't. You're not going to lose on purpose just to extend it, but it's certainly something to keep an eye on. I guess I don't know. It's just weird. And with the reevaluation, as you mentioned, Justin, it's not like, hey, yeah, this is your date that you'll be back. Go ahead. It could be okay. He's reevaluated. It's two more weeks, and then we start really worrying. So the verbiage used in the release is a little tricky to me, but nonetheless, let's go back to Drew Holiday, as you mentioned. He has certainly struggled offensively at 15 points last night on 6 of 16 shooting, but it's just not the same Drew Holiday, as you mentioned, that we've seen in the regular season. He used the excuse of rust after game one. What was his excuse yesterday if he talked with you guys at all?
I guess TBD was that. it was funny when he said Russ, and he was adamant. I think we all kind of accepted that. But in the back of your mind, and to be fair, this is a team that has never really played well in their first game back after a long layoff. And game one specifically in the playoffs have kind of been where the Bucks have been at their worst under Bud. The shooting percentages and the record, they're below 500 in game one. So I think you looked at that and you looked at the layoffs and you said, okay, I can kind of buy that. However, how do you explain the first quarter? Because you guys came out pretty well in the first quarter with the rust being most prevalent there and then bounced back. So yeah, I'm not sure how you chalk this up, but to me it kind of reminds you, at least it should, of in the regular season at the end of January, they had that game against the Nuggets at home where they were just embarrassed and run off the court by Nikola Jokic. And there was a pretty spirited, you know, closed-door meeting between Coach Budenholzer, the staff, and the team after that game. And in practice, where the message was basically, are you guys ready to be serious now? And we saw the Bucks look like a much different team from that point going into the All-Star break, kind of some bumps just before the break and just after. But they played incredibly well in March and then kind of came down a little bit. This game, to me, you can point to the Chris injury, you can point to losing Bobby and all of it, but they just played extremely poorly and sloppy from the onset. And this game, to me, kind of reminds you of that and kind of calls for, okay, is it time for another one of those meetings of, are you guys ready to win this series? And, you know, nearly 40 turnovers through the first two games it doesn't matter who the opponent is. If you're giving them 40 turnovers and basically 20 points off of turnovers each game, you're putting yourself in an incredible hole. So that, to me, is the thing that, number one, you really have to cut out. And Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton have really been the two biggest culprits there.
Yeah, 10 between the two of those guys last night. So you're not lying. I mean, Drew Holiday with six of them again in game two. So it hasn't been pretty. It's been a little choppy. It's been a little ugly and maybe a little rusty, according to Drew Holiday. But certainly something to clean up. We're joined by Justin Garcia. You hear him on the Bucks Radio Network as well as Bucks Talk after every Bucks game on 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee. Who fills the Chris Middleton hole? Is that Pat Connaughton's job now, Justin? I imagine that's probably the direction they'll go.
So I think there's a couple of ways you could go, and I would lean towards Pat Connaughton just because that's a guy you really need to get going. That, you know, it's not to say Pat's been absent, but we haven't seen those Pat Connaughton-type performances that we saw for really most of the postseason last year, and Pat was off to a terrific start. The injury kind of slowed everything down. His first game back after the injury, he hit five threes, but then he's kind of been lost in the shuffle, and even, you know, the stats for the first two games of this series, the minutes haven't really been to the level that I think we expected. I thought he'd be in the low to mid-30s per game, and he hasn't been quite there yet. But just the rebounding numbers, too, is what jumps out to me. Not so much the points and the three-point shooting, but Pat, you know, historically has found a way to make an impact in the box score in the minutes he's on the floor, and we just haven't seen that, not only in these two games, but for the last two or three weeks, really. So I think that's the one option, and that's what I would lean towards, of putting Pat Connaughton in the starting lineup, and maybe that can get him going a little bit. Because, you know, if we assume, and I do, that Drew Holiday is going to turn it around and be the offensive player he was for most of the regular season, you still need more than just Drew and Giannis. And even if it's Brooke Lopez kind of giving some of the performances like we've seen in the first two games, you still need one of those bench guys, whether it's Pat or Grayson Allen, Bobby, assuming he's healthy and back on the floor tomorrow. Somebody else has to give you that impact. And, you know, to me right now, it's Pat Connaughton that you would look at the most. So maybe that would jumpstart him. The other option is, if you want to say, look, defense is what's most important here, I do wonder if it means putting Javon Carter in the starting lineup, and then you can kind of have him chase around Alex Caruso and just match up Drew Holiday initially on DeMar DeRozan and switch things up like that a little bit. Or, you know, Drew stays on Zach LaVine and keep Wesley Matthews on DeMar DeRozan, but that would be your kind of defensive lineup to just get the Bulls out of their rhythm offensively from the start. The problem with that is it kind of throws off how you stagger things, especially with George Hill out once again tomorrow night. So I would lean towards Pat Connaughton, and I kind of feel like the trust that Bud has in Pat, probably a pretty good chance that's who we'll see in the starting lineup.
Yeah, I think so, too. And Justin, talk about reading minds, because I was going to go the direction of Javon Carter next. So you already covered that. That's great. So that leads me then to the defensive assignment on DeMar DeRozan. We saw him go off for 41 last night. I imagine we won't see that again in this series. Do you think they make that switch that you just alluded to? Put Drew Holiday on DeMar DeRozan and let him be the pesk, slowing him down? Or is it kind of just, you know, it's a matter of matchups and who's on the floor, and you know, they'll just go with what they've been going with?
I think they're going to kind of keep doing what they've been doing. I mean, I think Wesley Matthews has done an okay job on DeMar DeRozan, but you have those guys, and Giannis, especially in game one, got matched up on DeRozan quite a bit, and Giannis more than held his own. He played pretty well against him, so you're comfortable with that. But you know, if you were going to make a change, to me, it was screaming for it, and I was talking about it with Ben Brust off the air a couple of times in the third and fourth quarter, and then finally we saw this move made. But at times, some of the lineups the Bulls had on the floor, where you have Tristan Thompson and Patrick Williams and DeMar on the floor together, it just screamed for, why would you not help off of one of those two guys and just start double-teaming DeMar DeRozan and say, look, if we're going to lose because the Bulls are hitting open shots and it's coming from Patrick Williams or Tristan Thompson, then we're going to lose. But we're getting the ball out of DeMar DeRozan's hands. Saw a little bit of that in the fourth quarter, but I think that if there's any type of adjustment, to me, it's that. Just get the ball out of his hands early and say it's got to be somebody else on this team, because outside of Zach LaVine, the Bulls don't really have any shot makers that you would trust. I know that they have guys like Kobe White who have been good statistically in the regular season, and Vooch has had some moments against the Bucks, but in a seven-game series, I'm going to take my chances that that supporting cast outside of Zach LaVine, they can't do it more times than not, and I'm going to get the ball out of DeMar's hands and say somebody else has to beat us here.
Yeah, no, I'm with you 100%. Justin, last one for you, and it's pretty simple. Why can't this team shoot free throws?
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't know what it is. It's the deeper they go in the playoffs, the better they get at free throws for whatever reason. And that applies to Giannis, too, that it was funny. Absolutely. How most of the year we were talking about 75%-ish, and at times he was flirting with 80% at the free throw line, and then all of a sudden you look up and you see another 11-for-18 performance and another a couple of times where he goes 0-for-2 at the line. So it just seems like it's kind of like an old car that you got to turn it on and let it warm up for a little bit. That's the Bucks in the first and second round. And that's kind of the story of the Bucks in a playoff series. Games 1 and 2, they're okay. I think the positive here, even with Chris Middleton out, games 3 and 4 under Bud is where this team really thrives. Combined, they are 14-4 in those games, 7-2 in each games 3 and game 4 under Bud. So that's where they found their success. The longer the series goes on, the better this team gets. And they do, contrary to what a lot of fans thought about Bud, they do make those adjustments as the series goes on. So I think that's the positive for this team going forward, even without Chris Middleton.
Not always in-game adjustments, but between-game adjustments for Coach Bud. And you're right. The middle of the series is where they thrive. So we'll stay optimistic as we head into Game 3 tomorrow. He's Justin Garcia. You can find him on Twitter at TMJ Garcia. And you can hear him before, between, and after every Bucks game on 620 WTMJ and 100.5 ESPN in Madison. Appreciate the time as always, JG. We'll catch up soon.
Anytime. I'm surprised you're not going to hit me with any Cody Rhodes questions or anything. I guess we'll do that some other time.
Yeah, I was disappointed they didn't ask either of us to be on that new Good Karma Wrestling show, but it's okay. I'll let our people talk to their people.
We can start our own and be the AEW to their wrestling show.
Oh, I think me and Justin just turned the heel right here on Bucks at 6. I think that's what we just did. That's fantastic. We'll catch up on some Bulls perspective next. Jonathan Hood from ESPN 1000 in Chicago, host of Cap and J Hood, also host of Good Karma Wrestling, ironically enough. He'll join us next. It's Bucks at 6 on ESPN Wisconsin. On Bucks at 6 here across ESPN Wisconsin. Bucks fall in game number 2 at Fiserv Forum. Woof. We're going to get some Chicago perspective on that now. Alex Grove hanging out with you until 7 o'clock. Excited to be joined now on the First Midwest Bank phone line by Jonathan Hood. You hear him weekday morning 7 to 10 on ESPN 1000 on Cap and J Hood. You also hear him, well, right now, I guess. He's two places at once. Good Karma Wrestling across all Good Karma brand socials, including at ESPN Milwaukee, at ESPN Madison on Twitter. J Hood, you're in two places at once. Really appreciate the time, dude. How are you after that Game 2 victory for Chicago?
Well, both of you are fine. Thanks for asking. We both appreciate you asking with me being in two places at one time. Yeah, Chicago's overjoyed just to be able to get a game against Milwaukee because it has not been easy in the regular season. It wasn't easy the other night against Milwaukee also. So just to be able to beat a top three team in the East for once is a step in the right direction.
Well, you mentioned that, Jonathan, right? Like, all the narratives that have been talked about this week is the fact that Chicago hasn't been able to beat a top team. Milwaukee, 17-1 over the last 18 prior to Game 2 against Chicago. All these narratives put to bed with a road win on Wednesday night. I kind of want to get into the turnaround from Game 1 to Game 2. The shooting was like, it was like completely different teams almost, right? Pretty bad shooting-wise in Game 1. Shooting lights out in Game 2. What changed from your perspective?
Well, I think that there was rust on for both teams, for the Bucks and the Bulls. Maybe more the Bucks and the Bulls actually in Game 1, and because I expected a better effort from Milwaukee in Game 1, because it all starts and finishes with Giannis Antetokounmpo. So I thought that he would be able to carry this team to maybe a 8 to 10 point win on Game 1. I thought that the Game 1 was winnable for Chicago in a lot of ways, in which Vucevic was attempted 10 three-point shots. believe it was 2-for-10 or something like that from three. So when it was really clutch in the fourth quarter, he failed to be able to knock down those threes. Same thing with Zach LaVine. His shot selection was sketchy, but yet that game was still in the balance for game one, and Chicago fell short. I thought that in game two, we saw as a much better defensive effort. You know, Alex, my whole thing with the Bulls this year is that they have enough scoring, but if you're just not going to make stops, you just can't win in this league. And I just think that the reason why the Bulls are not the number one seed or two seed going in these playoffs is because of defense. They slipped and was sliding all the way down to the sixth spot in the East because of the lack of defense. And I thought that they let go of the rope a lot toward the end of the regular season. And I thought that that was a much better effort for game two from Chicago. And again, 114 to 110 is one thing, but I thought that Caruso and others really stepped up defensively. And that's really, to me, the difference between game one and two.
Jay Hood, I've got a confession to make when it comes to Alex Caruso. I don't know what it is, but the guy really bugs me, right? Like, the backwards, yeah, upside down headband, you know, the logo was on the back of his head and it was upside down. I didn't get that. Gus Johnson kept calling him world champion Alex Caruso. I don't know what it was, but he really bugged me. Am I crazy for thinking that?
No, but that's the point, though, right? If he bothers you, that's actually a good thing, right? Look, you know what? He'd be a great Buck.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, Grayson Allen bothers people. The same thing in Caruso, because he's a stick in a beehive. I will tell you that the Lakers miss Alex Caruso. And you say, well, here's a guy here that doesn't really score in double digits. What does he really do? I covered him when he was in the G League, South Bay Lakers, right? Okay. Comes out with a uniform two sizes too big, still the backwards headband, and I'm like, who is this guy coming off the bench for the South Bay Lakers when I was calling Windy City Bulls basketball in the G League? And I said, who is this guy? And this guy was on the floor diving, getting loose balls, at the top of the key, defending the best players, and he had no other choice but to give a max effort. And this is who he is, right? You look at him and you say, are you really going to take on Giannis one-on-one? Yeah. Yeah, because he has to, because he has no other choice. You don't think much of him when you first see him step on the floor, but then when he's on the floor and he's leading your defense in at the perimeter, and he's, you know, sticking his hand in there getting steals, it says, boy, this guy, he has no other choice but to give his all, and whatever his all is, he gives it. So, yeah, I understand why he is meddlesome and an irritant to a lot of teams, because it's like, this dude doesn't look like he can play, and then he does the little things that kind of keep your team together. And I think the Lakers are missing a guy like that, and he's actually been a real find for Chicago since signing with the Bulls.
Talked about it a little bit yesterday. Jonathan Hood, ESPN 1000, with us on Bucks at 6. I talked about it a little bit yesterday. The Lakers are missing everybody, Jonathan, right? Alex Caruso, oh, yeah. Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, all these guys that were there. Like, it's just kind of funny to see the fall from grace LA has had since winning that bubble title. They want all these guys back at this point, I think. But
hey, listen, Alex, this is what happens when you let one player really assemble your roster.
Yeah.
All right. But that's what it comes down to. This is why Giannis is so great for the league. So great. You hear people from the outside of the region, outside of our region in the Midwest, say that, oh, you know, Giannis, oh, if he was a Knick, oh, if he was a Laker, if he was in a much bigger market. No, what it is that Giannis is perfect for Milwaukee because he's not trying to leave anytime soon. He knows that the window is open for multiple championships. He's one of the faces of the league, if not the face of the league, and he's not trying to assemble a roster of old heads like LeBron was doing, trying to remake the movie The Wild Hogs, where, you know, here's Martin Lawrence and here's John Travolta and here's, you know, somebody else, and you're trying to have one last ride. You know, what he wants to do, Giannis, is to be able to settle in with this Bucks team, settle in with the Milwaukee community, and win multiple championships. And you got to like that. That guy's not trying to do anything besides win championships and not trying to assemble a roster like LeBron was doing in Los Angeles.
Born to be wild. Yeah, Wild Hogs reference. Yeah. That was pretty good, Jay Hood. Not bad.
That's what I do.
Not bad. I got to ask about DeMar DeRozan, because the guy was fine in his spots. He was lights out in game two. I mean, you can't expect a 40-point performance from DeMar DeRozan every game, you know, in this series, but you're damn glad to have it, and it ultimately led to the win in game two. You've seen him, obviously, up close and personal all year long. How special is he, and how well does he fit into the Chicago Bulls, persona, if you will?
DeMar DeRozan you're talking about, right?
Yeah, correct.
Well, so DeMar DeRozan, when he came to the Bulls, what I thought of him is that, boy, there's a solid veteran that can give you 22, 23 points a game, and he'll fit in nicely with Zach LaVine. And it ends up that DeRozan ends up kind of being the face of the team because he starts leading. He has this big season that no one really expected. We expected DeRozan to be able to have a nice season. He's the oldest player on the team. But no one really expected him to be an early MVP candidate. And he deserved those accolades because here's a guy here when we saw him with San Antonio and Toronto. We watched him and we thought, a really good piece to the puzzle, but in the playoffs kind of fades. Doesn't disappear, but kind of fades, not as much offensively, not as effective. But I think that he's enjoying so much success with this team. There's so much offensive freedom, and he gels well. It's funny. You know, Zach LaVine's going to get this big contract here at the end of the season. He's going to get, almost a full boat contract from the Bulls. But it's actually DeRozan that has put in so much of the work and has really carried this team a lot this season. The reason why the Bulls are even close to the 50-win mark is a lot of it is because of DeRozan. It's not flashy. That guy's giving you the mid-range on a regular basis. He's not trying to shoot a bunch of threes. He just knows what his game is. File on extended to the basket. That's what he is. If he shoots a three, it's a surprise. There's balloons and confetti that comes down at the United Center floor anytime he shoots a three. It's so rare. But I really like his game, and he's gelled well. As just someone that could just be a sidekick to Zach and just, hey, you know what, I'll slow the game down for you. You don't have to jack up a whole bunch of shots ill-advised within the shot clock. Let me help you kind of just tailor the game into what I do, and it'll keep us in the ball game. I know that twos aren't sexy, but when he does it, it's very attractive.
I'll call it sexy because it's as smooth as butter is what DeMar DeRozan does for Chicago, dude. I mean, it was seriously really fun to watch. All fandom aside last night, what he was able to do, that mid-range, I mean, that is silky smooth. It was really impressive from him last night. I got to ask, because you were talking kind of the defensive adjustments Chicago made from game one to game two, Jay Hood. Giannis, there's still not really an answer for him, and I don't really expect there to be after he goes for 33-18 last night. What's your takeaway? How do you stop Giannis? Is it even doable?
No, you don't stop Giannis.
Right. Okay.
That's the whole thing. You don't in this series. The Bulls aren't stopping Giannis, and they're not stopping Lopez. And I just think that if you're Budenholzer, you look at the size of the Bucks team and you say, here's what we got to do. We got to make sure that we get inside and we'll be able to get a lot of shots on the inside, because look at Vucevic, a guy that's not going to come out and stop a three, not really a defensive presence for the Bulls. Tristan Thompson has some muscle. He came in, which I thought was a good pickup for the Bulls. But, Alex, when I first saw the roster, I said, the Bulls are a little small, not very physical. And I knew that coming in, but I think that the Bulls just relied on talent offensively. They relied on thinking, okay, we can outscore teams, kind of like the prototypical Billy Donovan teams that we saw with Oklahoma City. And I just look at Giannis and I look at Lopez as key factors. Lopez had 25 points and 6 rebounds. He can get that all day against the Bulls' defense. And the same thing with Giannis. Now, the thing that you look at, and we'll see what's going on with Middleton here, and we'll see what happens with Holiday and others, that's what you have to do, try to slow that down. The first half told me all I need to know about the Bulls' defense. When I watched how clunky I thought that the Bucks' offense was, where they weren't in rhythm, they couldn't get to their spots like they normally do in that first half. I said, you can see that there's two or three different looks defensively that Milwaukee got that they didn't see in game one. We'll see if that happens in game three.
Jonathan Hood, ESPN 1000 with us. Last one for you, Jay Hood. Obviously, the monkey's off the back of Chicago now, right? That narrative of not being able to beat a top team in the East. The series knotted up, going back to the United Center. What's the outcome? Is there? You mentioned Chris Middleton. He might be out the remainder of this series with the MCL sprain. Do you give Chicago a legitimate shot to stay in this, or is that too optimistic for you?
Well, not initially. I expected a gentleman's sweep of 5 for Milwaukee. I thought that the Bulls could win a game because I would think coming in, this is going to be one DeRozan game, one or a LaVine game, something like that, where the Bulls at home can be able to shoot the lights out and Milwaukee would lose at least one game. But now, if it is true that Middleton will not be involved, and we'll check on Portis in the eye and see whether or not he's going to play in game 3-2, now it's a different series. Not to the point where I think Chicago can win, Alex, but the point is that it's not a fait accompli like I thought it was when the series started. Look, it's not being pessimistic from my standpoint. It's just facts. Look at how Chicago has fared against the top three teams in the East and West. They were able to get their first win in that category. You see how the Bucks have played. They dominated the Bulls. So all you had was facts. And now, but if Middleton's not there, now I look at the Bulls having a puncher's chance to make this more of a series. I think that's only fair.
Yeah, similar to New Orleans with Phoenix, right? With no Devin Booker in that series. It changes the complexity of the series, but we still know who the better team is. So it'll be fun to watch. You hear him weekday morning, 7 to 10 on ESPN 1000, Cap and Jay Hood. You can find him on Twitter, at @TweetJayHood. Jonathan Hood from ESPN 1000. Appreciate the time, my friend.
All right, Alex. Thank you, brother.
Jonathan Hood will continue next. It's Bucks at 6 on ESPN Wisconsin. Bucks at 6, wrapping up on your Thursday night. Alex Strofe hanging out with you as we continue to react to the Game 2 loss for the Chicago Bulls for the Milwaukee Bucks at Fiserv Forum last night. 800-990-3776. That's the First Midwest Bank talk and text line. We go to the text portion because two interesting texts came through earlier in the show that I want to get to. Will, in the middle of our conversation with Justin Garcia, texted in simply, "It's a 5-game series." Yeah, I actually tend to agree there. I think it's 5 or 6. And then Daniel, right at the top of the show, said, "I honestly think people are overreacting. It's the NBA. These are professionals. Games are hard to win. It happens. If you happen to lose a game here and there, no matter the talent quality of the opponent." And I think that's accurate, too. I do think there's a little overreaction. I'm trying not to do any of that because I don't think the Bucks lose this series no matter what happens. You heard it maybe a bit in my conversation with Jonathan Hood. A big thanks to him and Justin Garcia for joining us today on Bucks at 6. I don't know that it's entirely personal, but I just don't like Alex Caruso. I just don't. I don't know if it's the backwards upside-down headband. I don't know if it's the fact that he almost ran over Bango the Buck after the opening tip last night. I don't know if anybody caught that. But the opening tip went out of bounds underneath the Bucks basket. And Bango had to run out of the way to not get ran over by Alex Caruso. So maybe that's what bugged me. I don't know if it's the fact that Gus Johnson, who was on the call for TNT last night, kept referring to him as Alex Caruso, world champion with Los Angeles. I don't know if it's the Chicago Bulls tweet about him being a better playoff passer than Aaron Rodgers. I don't know what it is, but it's under my skin. Maybe that's the idea. Similarly to like Grayson Allen with the Bucks. Alex Caruso, under my skin. I just can't get behind him. But that headband really annoyed the crap out of me. It was backwards. The logo was upside down. The NBA logo on the headband. The guy just bugs me. He just bugs me. And again, maybe that's the idea. I don't know. But I just can't get with the idea of Alex Caruso. One other thing from the NBA that I noticed last night, and this was outside of the Bucks-Bulls series. It was in the Philadelphia-Toronto Game 3 in Toronto that Philadelphia won. Goes up 3-0 in the series. Drake, the rapper, the official ambassador of the Toronto Raptors, walked out of the stadium with Joel Embiid. We know Drake's a flip-flopper. But what the hell is this? He's been like the Toronto Raptors diehard forever, and now he's walking out with the Philadelphia superstar, Joel Embiid. I don't know, man. I don't get how people think, because I'm not flipping sides. I'm still not flipping opinions either. I think the Bucks win this series in 5 games, and I think they win Game 3 tomorrow at the United Center in Chicago. We're off tomorrow. No show tomorrow. No show Monday due to On the Tee. So we'll be back Tuesday to break down a couple of games. Hopefully a couple of Bucks wins here on Bucks at 6. Game 2, not ideal. the first two games haven't always been pretty under Coach Mike Budenholzer for the Milwaukee Bucks. They tend to make it a little bit more challenging than it needs to be. But what you got to look for here in these next couple games? Jrue Holiday turning it around offensively. Brooke Lopez continuing to do what he's done in the first two games. And let Giannis, because I messes with Giannis. And if you messes with Giannis, I think he's going to be in good shape going forward, leading the Bucks hopefully to a 5 or 6 game series win as we wrap it up. That'll do it this week for Bucks at 6. Again, we're back on Tuesday to break down a couple of games that happen over the course of the weekend. I hope you have a terrific weekend. We've got Timberwolves and Grizzlies in progress. That game is already underway. Coming up next, across ESPN Wisconsin, some more playoff action. A bunch of games in the Western Conference tonight. 31-18, Minnesota in front of Memphis. Whoa! In that series. Coming up next, this has been Bucks at 6 across ESPN Wisconsin.